This is a Charles Russell Speechleys podcast.
Welcome to this Charles Russell Speechleys podcast. My name is Emma Humphreys, a partner at the firm. This year, we're forced to celebrate Pride only virtually. To do so, we thought we'd aim to cover a variety of conversational topics via podcasts, not least to explain why it's important to have an inclusive workplace and environment where we feel encouraged to be ourselves around friends and colleagues. Through these podcasts, we hope to provide you with more information and awareness around the LGBTQ community and experiences within it. The podcast has been split so that you can listen to the different topics independently or all together, one after the other. This Guide to Pride series will cover generational challenges, allyship, and an insight to Pride itself. I'm delighted today to be joined by four interviewees, and I will let them introduce themselves and provide their own bit of background.
Hi, my name's Annie Southerst. I'm a trustee of Opening Doors London. We're a charity that supports older LGBT people in the capital. I'm spending a lot of time in my retirement helping the charity raise the issues that affect older LGBT people, particularly around isolation and loneliness. I have a background in mental health in the NHS when I was a working person. I have a daughter who is also a lesbian who lives in London, and I have two grandchildren with them.
Hello, my name is Sam Lear, and I'm an associate in the real estate disputes team at Charles Russell Speechleys, and I'm also co-chair of the LGBTQ Plus Network, and I identify as bisexual.
Hi, my name's Beatrice Adu. I'm a Fiona in the real estate team at Charles Russell Speechleys. I'm also head of the Allies Network and part of our diversity group here at Charles Russell Speechleys.
Hi, I'm Richard Honey. I'm an associate in the Tax, Trust and Succession team, and I'm also one of the co-chairs of the firm's LGBTQ plus committee. I'm gay and my pronouns are he and him.
Well, thanks very much all. Firstly, I'd like to try to establish if you as our interviewees think that the challenges for the LGBTQ plus community have changed over the years. I'm going to start by discussing that with Annie, Sam and Richard. To the three of you, laws have changed and attitudes have changed, but our focus for this session is whether things have really changed from your perspective. And when we're thinking about that, I do think it's helpful to start with an explanation of why we're talking about these issues. Some people will say that they don't talk about their heterosexuality in the office. So why is there a need to have a spotlight on LGBTQ plus issues? Richard, would you mind perhaps giving us your perspective on that?
Sure, Emma. It's a really good question because some people will still say that my sexuality isn't important and that we've come a long way. So why should it feature as part of the office environment? Some will say to me that your private life is private. And I've had several people say to me, what happens behind closed doors should remain that way. But I think that's a misconception and it's an integral part of who I am. Imagine coming to work on a Monday and you're asked by a colleague, what did you get up to over the weekend? For a heterosexual colleague, it might be quite easy for them to say, I went to the cinema with my girlfriend, my boyfriend, I went on a date. But as a gay man who started the firm in 2013, I was so conscious about myself that I went back into the closet. How do you respond to something like that without giving away part of yourself, outing yourself all the time? So you tend to divert on topics, you change the narrative, you feel as though you have to tell a white lie, potentially come across as evasive, and you're not really being your true self at work. It's mentally exhausting. And every time that a question is asked, you're always thinking, how did I respond to that before? Making sure that the narrative sticks for everybody. For me, there's still a stigma over what a stereotypical gay man should look like or act like. I referee football, I have a very close-knit group of heterosexual male friends, and several people have said to me, well, you don't come across as gay, but I don't think that's the point. The Stonewall Workplace survey that was undertaken as part of the Equality Index in 2020 says that over a third of lesbian and gay people at work don't feel comfortable in coming out. Three quarters of bisexual people don't feel comfortable, and two thirds of trans people. And that's just colleagues. That's not the wider public. And that's in firms and businesses that take diversity and equality seriously. We spend so much time with our colleagues, or at least we did before lockdown. And so how can we really be our most productive, truest version of ourselves if we can't be honest at work?
Yeah, I think that's a really good way of explaining it, actually, Richard. And I suppose what also feeds into that is the sort of assumptions that come with people's questions, isn't it? Because people will say, oh, you know, have you got a girlfriend? That, you know, it's just so easy for people to make those assumptions. And the question starts off almost as a loaded question, as you say, and then you feel uncomfortable, you know, in that split second decision of, am I going to lie in answer to that? Am I going to tell the truth? How are they going to react? I'm guessing that's, you know, that's sort of how it often can play out.
Exactly. And every time that you're asked that question, you're faced really with the reality of, am I going to come out to this person? And that isn't necessarily true for, you know, a heterosexual colleague in the office.
No, I think, you know, these sorts of challenges, and they varied, aren't they, the challenges that people face in this community. I'd be interested to hear about the sorts of barriers and difficulties that you faced as you were growing up, because obviously, you know, these challenges are often present throughout people's lives. Sam, did you have any experiences when you were growing up?
Yes, and for everybody, the experience would be very different. I grew up in rural Somerset. I went to an independent school, which was quite steeped in religion. So I never felt comfortable about sharing or expressing the non-heterosexual part of my character, because I think one of the aspects about being bisexual is that part of you thinks that you could lead, in inverted commas, a straight life. And I did for quite a few years. And that's probably a regret of mine that I didn't use that opportunity to at school or even at university to express the non-heterosexual part of my character. But my school, you very much did encounter homophobic bullying, even if it was just teasing or the use of pejorative language. I dare say it's far worse than lots of other places, and certainly far worse in history. And hopefully we're now on an upward curve where everyone can feel free to be themselves, even at school level.
Annie, as a slightly older person, what were your experiences? Do you think perhaps greater barriers than you would do if you were growing up now?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, I come from the generation of LGBT people who grew up when largely, if it wasn't initially, it was illegal to be homosexual if you were a man. It was never for a woman. But certainly post-69, when homosexuality was partially decriminalised, things were supposed to change. And that was very much the time when I was starting to come out. But they didn't change for a long time. So we have swathes of old LGBT people who lived their lives hiding away from society and not being able to be open about who they were, not being able to be open at work, not be able to, having to face difficulties with their families, facing troubles with the law on a regular basis. So things have changed enormously. Personally, for myself, I came out in my 30s and I was married to a man at the time and had a small child. So I had enormous barriers to face myself in terms of establishing a new life outside my heterosexual marriage. And alongside that, and alongside a lot of women in similar situations, having to fight for the rights to see my child, that was probably one of the biggest barriers that I came across. I then had to reestablish my working life, reestablish my community, become part of a different community. Enormous challenges.
Gosh, yes. You know, you say that, and you, it's one of those things where I know that to be the case, and yet when you say it, I'm completely shocked, because the world has moved on so much that actually remembering that it was once illegal, you know, I do actually forget that. it's kind of shocking when you point that out. Things have fortunately changed over the years. I mean, in terms of how you think they've changed, what are the areas where you've noticed the most differences, Annie?
All the way around, obviously, you know, in terms of being able to be out in my life, it's not an issue anymore. It's still an issue and continue to be an issue with my family. For many years, my mother was very, very challenging about my sexuality, to the extent when I actually had to say to her, look, you know, this isn't going to work if we're still to have a relationship. So we agreed for me not to talk about it and for her not to ask about it. And that was a sort of massive loss of my life, really, but I didn't want to lose my relationship with my mother. So sort of that sort of thing, I don't think has changed for a lot of people who are LGBT, their relationships with their families. But I think work has changed. I think social life, I think general acceptance in the community has changed. And of course, the law has changed. My lesbian daughter is married and has two children, and they have two women on the birth certificate. I mean, that's the most extraordinary change. Going along with her to get one of the children their birth registered to Leytonstone Library in this multicultural environment, where not an eyebrow was raised about two women being on a birth certificate. It was quite extraordinary, and that's sort of big. That was a big highlight of my life, I think, in terms of how things have changed. Changed all the way around for the better, but you know, still challenges for young people, still challenges at school, still challenges in the workplace, I think, with people still feeling as though they can't come out. But yeah, massive changes, I think, on the sort of gender identity scenario. You know, we have quite a lot of trans members in Opening Doors London, and you know, that whole issue of visibility, I think, for everybody has improved beyond recognition.
Thanks, Annie. As you say, some very positive stories there, especially with regard to your daughter. Richard, you know, talking about change, and you were saying about, you know, obviously difficulties in a work environment. Have you seen changes, do you think, in the office environment, or, you know, when you're out socialising, that sort of thing? Have you noticed that over the years?
Yeah, I mean, Annie, your story is incredible. And the work that's been put in over the years is not just happened overnight. This is a gradual change that's taken place. You know, in the workplace, we've come a long way in only 7 years that I've been at the firm. When I first started at Charles Russell Speechleys in 2013, we didn't have an LGBTQ committee. And now we're one of the top 25 law firms in the Stonewall Equality Index. It is definitely a much more inclusive environment. And I talk not just personally, but also from gay, lesbian, bisexual friends that I have who also feel that their workplaces are more inclusive and tolerant. But as Annie says, there's still plenty to do. I think that recent events in the media show that there is a huge amount of polarity when it comes to views and discussions, especially on gender identity and trans issues. And I think that there can always be more work undertaken to make everybody feel as though they are included within the workplace.
Yeah, I think that's a really good observation, actually, Richard, because I remember when I started work 20 years ago at the firm I was with then, I certainly wasn't aware of anybody being in the LGBTQ plus community. And I think it would have been quite difficult for people to come out at that time in that environment, whereas, you know, as you may know, we have what we call partner and partner drinks at the firm, where partners bring along their significant other if they want to, and we have a drink together to say thank you to the other halves who was helped with all the stress at home, and there's a whole variety of partners that come along, and that's really nice, it's nice that people feel completely comfortable to do that. I think 20 years ago that would have been very different indeed. So it's good, as you say, the progress is being made, definitely, and it's good to see. What do we think has had a real impact to drive these changes? Richard, perhaps I'll get you to pick up on that on your stories about the office. You know, what do you think has made some difference in that side of things?
I think for me, it's about seeing others who I can identify with. So that's role models in the media, in the public eye. When I was a teenager, I wasn't particularly sure of my sexuality, and I only really came to terms with my sexuality when I was at university. And over the last 10 years, the number of high-profile gay men that I can associate myself with in the mainstream media is vastly different, and that is ever increasing. So for my own personal growth, that was really important. And from a wider work perspective, I think it's that somebody gains reassurance and confidence from others being visible or quietly visible, even within the office environment. Seeing somebody else who you can identify with, who is open about their sexuality, open about their gender, their identity, for me is really important. And we should always strive to encourage others to take that step.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Annie, from your perspective, presumably, did you see role models when you were coming out? Is that something that you think has made a difference, or do you think there's other factors as well driving change?
There weren't very many role models in my time, it has to be said. I mean, I didn't even know what a lesbian was, I don't think, really. I fell in love with a woman, but and things changed. But I can remember once walking down a London street and seeing a very butch woman walking towards me and being absolutely fascinated, but absolutely no idea that she may have been a lesbian or what that was. And I think that was the same for a lot of people of my generation, that when they came out, there were no role models really. And that obviously made it, very difficult, because you don't have a context, you don't have anything to identify with. Role models started sort of coming out and about, didn't they? The sort of late 80s and 90s, when people like, Elton John came out, and Cillian McKellen. But before that, there wasn't very much. So no, it hasn't really formed an enormous part of my journey, having role models.
Yeah, and I guess, again, that's just a reflection of the fact that, everybody's journey is so very different, isn't it? And everyone's experience is so different. And, of course, we're talking here about the changes, that we've seen in the UK, but things can still be very different overseas. Sam, you and I were talking about this a while back, and I think you are aware of some of the difficulties which can be experienced by people when they're away on holiday or perhaps on business abroad.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's around the time when you were going to Russia, and of course there was a huge international tournament happening there not all that long ago with the Football World Cup, and there's quite a lot of press attention sort of given towards Russia's treatment of LGBTQ plus people. And it is sometimes easy to forget when you're booking holidays that the UK is arguably one of the more progressive countries in the world, although it's perhaps by no means the most progressive. But speaking from personal experience, where I choose to go and travel is often determined by that country's attitudes towards LGBTQ people. And I would typically book through maybe student travel companies where most of their clients, or at least some of their clients, would identify as being LGBTQ, so they will tailor packages with that in mind. But even with my partner, when we choose hotels in slightly riskier countries, we might choose twin beds, and we'll be careful about how we conduct ourselves in public. And it's a balance between being respectful of the country you're visiting, and also trying to express yourself as far as you possibly can. And that is a tricky balance for lots of people.
Yeah, and I can imagine a little something off that, because I'm just trying to remember where it was. I think it was Japan where I went on holiday, and I read about the etiquette, and there was a guidance that, that they didn't like kissing in public. So I took it on board, as you say, to respect the etiquette. I don't make it sound like I'm constantly snogging my husband, but you know, you suddenly realise how often you do go to sort of be affectionate, and then suddenly you sort of feel restricted. And actually, I did find that not that comfortable. Actually, not that anyone made me feel bad about it, but just that consciousness of how you behave and how others might perceive it. So, yeah, I have some sympathy with that, some understanding. And I think to wrap up this section of the podcast, I think it's probably useful to call on a bit of hindsight and ask each of you what advice you would give your younger self. Are there any words of wisdom that you would offer for people who want to come out but haven't done so yet? Sam, perhaps we could start with you on that one.
Sure. I would say this is very personal to me, and I think everyone needs to make informed decisions about their own lives. But what I would tell my teenage self is to be bold, be brave, don't second guess how people might react, and be yourself, and don't be scared to sort of test yourself or experiment. But certainly for a bisexual, it's all too easy to try to conform to a heteronormative narrative and to completely ignore a substantial part of your identity. And I would tell myself not to do that, and to express yourself and be yourself at school and at university, which I only was in part.
Thanks, Sam. And Richard, what about you? What words of wisdom would you get out there?
Apart from finding myself earlier, I think university was quite late. The words of wisdom I probably give myself would be to start small. Coming out's a journey, and it can often feel as though you've got the weight of the world on your shoulders. That journey feels easier step by step of the way, and each time that you come out takes a little bit of that weight off. Trying to find someone who's an ally feels as though that journey is easier because that person will be alongside you every step of the way of that journey.
Thanks, Richard. And Annie, perhaps you'd like to wrap up and tell us what your words of wisdom would be if you could talk to your younger self.
To be proud of who we are, whoever we are and however we are. And in terms of coming out, very much to reflect, you know, what Richard said, choose very carefully the people who you want to come out to. Choose those people who love and accept you for who you are. Do it gently, and don't put yourself under any pressure for having to do this quickly, because it's a very, very, can be a very long and very difficult time. But finding support around you, people who love you, are really important.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Annie. And that will lead on nicely, I think, to the second part of this podcast, which is going to be talking about the importance of allies.
This is a Charles Russell Speechlees podcast.